Welcome to the INSS podcast. We're going to have a brief tour d'horizon of the Middle East, barely a month to the elections, the general elections in Israel. My name is Gilad Sher, and I'm here with Dr. Yehuda Ben-Meir, a senior research fellow at the INSS, a psychologist, a lawyer, was a member of the Knesset for about 13 years in the 70s and the early 80s. And the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs. Hello, Yehuda.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. And, I read a tweet this morning by our colleague, Dan Shapiro, talking about what would be the surprise that President Trump would offer Netanyahu prior the elections. And he said, well, here are the options. A U.S.-Israel defense pact, allowing Jonathan Pollard to travel to Israel, perhaps a presidential visit with stops at the Western Wall and the Golan Heights, or a U.S. approval of annexation of the West Bank settlements. What do you think?
Well, I think that Mr. Netanyahu would probably make major efforts to have something before the election that can give him a boost, because at the moment his chances are not as good as they were before, and he certainly realizes, he says it, by the way, openly in his conversations with his colleagues.
Well, that's part of his campaign, you know.
Yeah, that this election is an open election. There's no far-gone conclusion, and his Netanyahu needs some surprise before the election. I certainly would not attempt to try to predict what Mr. Trump can do. I don't think there's any logical human being who would try to undertake such a mission to predict what Trump
can do. That's an understatement.
It's a possibility. By the way, a defense pact between Israel and the United States is something which has been discussed for many, many years in Israel. And as you know, as well as I, if not better, many, many people in Israel are not in favor of a formal defense pact. The disadvantages outweigh the advantages. We have strategic agreements with the United States. We have a deep alliance with the United States. And a formal defense pact, in the opinion of many experts in Israel, it would not add to it. Probably the most, if you ask me, if I had to guess, one of the possibilities, I think it would be something along Pollard. Because this is something relatively easy for the president to do, and it doesn't have any foreign policy significance or any diplomatic significance. He has a problem with the intelligence services, which is, as we know, in the United States has always been opposed. This is something he can do.
So nothing really.
Send Pollard as a present to Netanyahu a week before the elections, and every the press will be full of it. It might help. It probably would help Netanyahu, whether it would help him dramatically, I doubt, but this is a possibility.
So nothing really related to the peace plan, the ultimate deal, the deal of the century, that might or might not be laid out post the elections.
Well, I saw a tweet from the chief Twitter, President Trump, a tweet this morning, if I read in the press, probably, as I imagine it's correct, that he said that after the Israeli elections, he will release the deal of the century. I've mentioned already a number of times on INSS podcasts, my personal opinion, I don't think he's ever going to release the deal of the century, a proposed peace plan, which has been in the works for now, we're talking about almost 3 years.
You know that Rob Satlow and Dennis Ross, both from the Washington Institute,
told them not to do it.
They have a bet on that.
I have a bet. Okay.
They do have. And Satlow believes that he's of the same opinion
as, they will not be.
As you are.
I think that they realize that I don't know what they have there, but at the moment this is a non-starter. I read what Dennis Ross and Satlow wrote. And they wrote that it could do more damage than good. But again, this is my gut feeling. If you're waiting for 3 years and each time you have something else, so maybe after the elections, the way it looks now, polls can change, but it's going to be very difficult to form a government. At the moment, neither side can form a government, so this will drag on. We're already by that time in an election year in the United States. I don't believe he will present it, but I certainly doubt that he represented before the elections, because it probably wouldn't necessarily help Bibi. It could probably do him damage. Right. That's one of the reasons he postponed it, supposedly, all the time.
Right. So let's assume that, just for the sake of the argument, that that we have, once again, in a right or right and righter government established in Israel after the elections on September 17th. Do you think that there is a kind of a tacit understanding, and even more than that, between the White House and Netanyahu, that annexation, partial or full annexation, gradual or one-off annexation of the West Bank would be not agreed upon but accepted by the United States?
Well, again, I said I'm the last one to predict what Trump can do, and I doubt that there are very few serious individuals who will attempt to to predict what Trump can do. If you have an extreme right coalition of 61, 62 members, again, no one, by the way, is speaking of full annexation of the West Bank. Even the right wing.
I'm talking about gradually annexing a consensual parts like Gush Etzion, Male Adumim, etc. You know, and gradually applying Israeli sovereignty over Israel.
A very narrow 61, 62, 63, mm-hmm. One color government in Israel, which would have a very strong opposition of almost half the Knesset. If logic would apply, would have to think 10 times before undertaking a course, the ramifications which are very extreme and hard to predict. First of all, annexation, which means the end of, even if it's gradually beginning, it basically means the end of a two-state for two people solution, would be, of course, condemned universally, certainly outside of the United States. It will be, in my opinion, condemned in the United States Congress. We just saw a resolution passed by almost 400 members. Once again, mentioning the two-state for two-people solution as the only way to move forward would cause Israel not only to, problems all over the world, but certainly serious public opinion problems within the United States. And we're talking about an election year. We're talking about a possibility, of course, that a Democratic president can be elected. And this would result in serious dissension within Israel itself. Half of the population will be against. And finally, there always is the danger that this can lead to an outbreak of terrorism in the West Bank, whether organized terrorism or what we call individual terrorism. And for a very narrow government to undertake such a risky policy, knowing Netanyahu, and we know that he before elections, he promises everything. He's not the only politician who does so, but he does it with a very wide approach. But after elections, he does try to act cautiously. Right. And so I think this is not something predictable. What could be, and this could be, by the way, even in a wider government, would be a very limited annexation of one or two settlement blocks that are, I remember Carter, President Carter, hard to find a more serious critic of Israel than President Carter, when he visited in Gush Etzion and the Etzion Block, he himself said, everyone takes for granted that Etzion Block will be part of Israel.
Sure, but the fact of the matter is that you have to remember that despite the fact that these are, let's say, Male Adumim, Gush Etzion, and some other consensual parts of the West Bank, But during the last 42 years, since Likud first came to power in Israel with Menachem Begin's government in 1977, we had 17 successive governments in Israel.
And no one annexed.
And exactly. And we only had two that were not, that were labor governments, you know, Rabin in 92 and Barak in 99. And none of these governments ever annexed a square inch of the West Bank. There is a reason for that.
I agree with you. That's why I think it's very unlikely. It's very unlikely, even in a very limited right-wing government, although then there'll be serious pressure on Netanyahu, but he can withstand that pressure because the other, they don't have an alternative.
Right.
So all I'm saying is in the given, so I agree with you. Basically, I think it's, the probability is less because of all the problems that you said, because of all the consequences. I can see a certain situation. Let's say there's a Trump does present his plan. The Palestinians reject it totally in that. And again, it's not all settlement blocks, but it could be one or two areas which are very limited. They're adjacent to Israel. There are very few Arabs living there, etc. Could be as a certain reaction, and I agree with it, although this has a very low probability.
So this is totally contradictory to the INSS plan for a two-state solution. To be attained gradually over on a three-prong approach.
This you mean annexation?
No, annexation is completely in contrast to that.
Right.
We are talking about gradually moving towards a two-state reality, even in the absence of a full-fledged agreement, of walking on three tracks in parallel. Of the regional talks, of course, the regional outlook of what could be achieved with our Sunni neighbors, mostly bilateral talks, and of course, independent steps that could be taken, unrelated to the existence or the non-existence of a valid partner, in terms of solidifying the future of Israel and securing it as a Jewish,
well, as you said, this
as a Jewish democratic state with boundaries that might be in at least in the beginning, at the outset, could be provisional boundaries.
Provisional.
But later on,
by the way, that was the Bush's proposal at that time, if I remember correct, a state with provisional boundaries, which could be eventually changed as time went along and as a coexistence. This is INSS's proposal, which I think is a good proposal. But again, if there'll be a right-wing government, it's not going to advance it. That's
I agree.
Sure.
You know, we talked about the West Bank, we talked about annexation, and we forgot about Gaza. Gaza is actually...
It's hard to forget about Gaza.
Okay. So what is to be done, what should be done with Gaza under the current circumstances when every couple of years we have a violent, lethal round of confrontation and... The humanitarian distress within the Strip is terrible. What do you think about the way to resolve that?
Well,
it's not disconnected with the West Bank, of course.
You're giving me too hard a proposal to solve Gaza. You know, some people say it's insoluble. I don't believe anything is insoluble. But Gaza, as you said, you gave an example before that there have been so many governments in that. Same thing from Gaza. Since Gaza, or if we can start from 67 if you want, and we can start from the Oslo agreements and the Israel left Gaza. We can start from the total when Israel left Gaza and the separation that was that Arik Sharon did, etc.
And 14 this, years these
this,
days.
This festing problem... I think the problem is that Israeli government, partially mainly because of internal political constraints, partially because of lack of a strategic... by the way, the only one who took a strategic action was Arik Sharon. Arik Sharon took a strategic action. He took us out of Gaza. For better or for worse, one can argue it, but
well, this was a correct strategic decision in light of the long-term strategic planning
agree,
for Israel, but lousily managed.
Okay,
afterwards.
I don't want to talk. I'm just saying at least, but he took a strategic decision.
I agree.
Today, I mean, there are strategic possibilities. Everyone knows they give you three possibilities. One, to try to go into Gaza and destroy Hamas rule and destroy the Hamas military. It is achievable, of course. Price, a very heavy price. What's going to come instead of Hamas is an open question. The other possibility is to try to reach a long-range agreement with Hamas, which will have a change in the situation.
Long-term truce, which has always been there. Versus what?
Even a member of the government right now, he's acting foreign minister. A foreign minister, Mr. Katz, has suggested for a long time developing a port for Gaza.
That's out of the blue.
It's an example of moving forward. And of course, there always is the possibility not to do anything, go along with the status quo and move from one action to another action, etc. No Israeli government since Arik Sharon's decision, certainly the Netanyahu governments from then on, have never basically tackled the issue and tried to reach a strategic decision one way or the other. And this is what has to be done. And one can only hope that after the election, it's going to be after the election, of course, maybe there'll be a, but this is something that a wide government can do, a national unity government can do. Because again, I say there's internal political consequences and limitations of doing it, etc. But would try to go in either one of the two ways, but at least to try to find some long-range solution. Preferably to go along with the INSS program, as you mentioned, which sees Gaza as part of a two-state for two-people solution eventually.
That's basically what the Oslo agreements at the outset said.
Predicted, right.
Gaza and the West Bank would be a single territorial unit.
Yeah, that's part of the agreements, naturally.
Right. And do you see any conflagration before the elections in Gaza?
You know, prophecy has not been given to the wise, as our sages said. All I can say is I hope not. Israel has nothing to gain from something like that. In this sense, I must say I support Netanyahu's policy, which is one of restraint. It would seem, from what I read, and you may know much better than me, that the Hamas also has a leadership, I would say, it's a terrorist organization with a leadership, some of its leaders like Sinjar and others have been involved in terrible terrorist action all the time. But at the moment, being in control of Gaza, they seem to want not to reach a conflagration, and they want to try to improve somehow the living conditions and the humanitarian conditions in Gaza. They see this, a worsening of the situation as a threat to their own rule in Gaza. So I don't see a great desire on at least behalf of the governments in both sides, the Israeli government and Hamas rule in Gaza, for an immediate conflagration. But as we know, unfortunately, these things sometimes come unplanned as a result of actions that you don't have control over them, and something can happen, etc. And you have the public opinion on both sides, by the way. So certainly we cannot say that it's something impossible. But I would hope, and at least what we've seen until now, we just saw what we happened 2 days ago. You had four rockets sent to Israel. You had a number of Palestinians killed on the attempting to infiltrate. You had a certain very limited action of Israeli Air Force. And so far we've seen that the life has returned to normal. And Israeli government has not reacted. Hamas has not reacted. So there are restraints on both sides, and everyone should only hope and pray that it continues, certainly too much after the elections.
Right. Well, time is running out. So, we've been analyzing the situation, trying to assess the here at the Institute and in this conversation between us, trying to assess the short-term and long-term possibilities. But don't you think that we are living in an era of personal agendas having the upper hand over long-term policy planning? Just name Netanyahu and Trump for this in this context, and of course domestic considerations that take over the election campaign scene and affect the long-term considerations that are put aside and neglected during election campaigns and even between elections campaigns.
I think that this is to a certain degree what these elections are about. The elections in Israel now, and that's a different, by the way, it was in April 9th, now it's even more intensely so, Lieberman has made a major change here in the whole makeup of the blocs, etc. Certainly a major part of this election is the feeling amongst many parts of the population, of course the others and the Likud supporters disagree, that we have too much of a personal running, how did you call it, personal versus...
Personal agendas.
Agendas. I mean, this is what the election's about. I mean, the people who are going to vote, whether Kahol Lavan or the parties on the center-left, and including Lieberman's party, basically feel that Mr. Netanyahu has his personal agenda is taking over. He, of course, denies this. His supporters claim it's not so and that he's working for the good of the country. But this is a key aspect.
Just look at the last...
A key aspect in the election. There's no question about it.
Well, just look at the last fiasco, the recent fiasco about the two congresswomen entry to Israel. Okay. Wasn't that a pure example of that?
Again, I agree with you. I mean, and I think that, again, of course, certainly most of the press in Israel and most of the commentators, I think a lot of the public opinion, his own ambassador said differently, promised differently, is in a case where it was influenced by the personal agenda of Trump, Netanyahu. And the relationship between Trump and Netanyahu is not only one of the Prime Minister of Israel and the President of the United States, Israeli-American relations, which for Israel is crucial, but there is an element of a personal agenda on both sides here. And this is part of the elections in Israel because many people feel this is not right and should not be done. And what happened now is fiasco is an example of that.
Well, my last question to you would be, how bad is the situation right now between the Israeli government and the Democrats in the United States, as well as the American Jewry?
Well, again, I wouldn't put myself as the biggest expert in this to answer the question. Again, Gilad, you may know even better than me. I think your context with American Jewry is even better than me. But I think there's no question, and this I can say without any hesitation, that what has been created through the politics of Netanyahu and through his actions that he has done has created a situation where we face a grave, serious threat to the bipartisan support of Israel in the United States. And this was a key feature. Anyone, I myself, as you mentioned, was a deputy foreign minister, anyone who's been involved in Israeli diplomacy from the days of Ben-Gurion in 1948 till today knows that the rock-bottom concern was always to guarantee, unlike many other countries in the world, in Europe, governments change, policies to Israel change, okay? In Britain, if Coburn would come to power, it would be a totally different situation. In the United States of America, our key ally and our key supporter in the alliance between Israel and the United States, a key factor in Israel's security, the bipartisanship of that, the support by both parties, Israel should not become, or the Prime Minister of Israel should not become a partisan issue in the United States, was the most serious concern and always kept to. There is an erosion. There's an erosion. We see it in the polls. I mean, no question, erosion in the support amongst the Democrats. I'm talking about central Democrats, not the extreme, those two congresswomen who are anti-Semites and anti-Israel and anti-American. But in the mainstream of the democracy, and there's a serious crisis in terms of the relationship with the Jewish community, which in the final analysis is the best friend we have and the most trusted friend. And this is something which the new government would really have to give it much attention after the elections.
Okay, on this happy note,
Yehuda, and hope for the good.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this conversation.
It's always a pleasure talking to both of us together.
And this brings to an end the INSS podcast. Shalom to all of you.
Shalom.